WEEI Studios. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1. Lawrence, Boston. And Odyssey Sports Station. This is John Lyons right now on WEEI.
Process as far as selecting who the starting quarterback is. We have decided, or I have decided, that Jacoby Brissett will be our starting quarterback this season. Now, in saying that, as an organization, we're 100% behind Jacoby. There is no, you got a guy right here, you got a guy right there. We're 100% behind Jacoby. And I had an opportunity to talk to Drake. I had an opportunity to talk to Jacoby separately and also together. And I feel like we're all on the same page from an organizational perspective.
You said, you know, that you had the decision and it was your decision. What ultimately led you to Jacoby Brissett?
There are a lot of factors that led to this choice. I think, you know, the hard part is thinking in the short term and the long term at the same time. As an organization, though, we feel like Jacoby gives us our best chance to win right now.
You said that Jacoby Brissett will be the starting quarterback this season.
I don't want to get into hypotheticals. We can't go into the season saying, well, he's going to go X amount of weeks. Like, look, as long as Jacoby's going out there performing the way that we all have confidence in him doing, he'll be our quarterback this season. Thanks. Appreciate it. California.
Welcome in here on this beautiful Saturday afternoon. College football is well underway with you from 3 until just after 5 o'clock this evening. It's Shime and Lyons on a wonderful day. Lyons, what's up, bud?
What's going on, Shime? Week 1 of college football. Oh, Labor Day weekend. Busy
so
weekend
good.
For us. Looking forward to
it. Yeah, Georgia's already laying the smack down. I bet Wiggy's very happy about that. Tennessee, another team, just laying down smackdowns today. Penn State, West Virginia currently in like a thunderstorm delay.
Vanderbilt, Virginia Tech 20-20 late in the fourth.
Yeah, one of the few tight games going on right now in college football. But as you just heard coming into the show, that was Gerard Mayo earlier this week making his announcement on the starting quarterback for the New England Patriots this year, at least for week one. Jacoby Brissett will be your starter in week one against the Cincinnati Bengals. Lyons, your immediate reaction to the Gerard Mayo press conference and the announcement that Jacoby Brissett was named the starter?
So, two things. First of all, I know you and I disagree on this. I think it's the right move to start Brissett right away out of the gate. I'd still play May in the week 5 to 6 range. We can get into, you know, why I feel that way in a bit. But as far as the press conference goes and the announcement, I kept thinking because, and look, some of this is an unfair comparison, but this is what we have to compare it to. With the previous regime, what we would have heard all summer is the head coach would have said, I'm going to do what's best for the football team. Everybody's working. We're getting better day by day. And there would have been times, you guys on the Greg Hill show would have been like, you know, really, Bill, could you give us a little more?
Yeah,
there would have been times,
give us something.
There would have been times on the weekend I would have been like, Bill, could you give me a little more here? But I think that would have prevented some of the circusy atmosphere of the last couple weeks. And here's the thing. They very well could have a solid plan for Drake May. And he has made progress. I think from what I saw of him when he got drafted to mini camp, to the training camp practices I was at, to the preseason games, culminating in Washington the other night, you know, saw substantial progress in my eyes. He's gotten better. So it feels like whatever plan they're doing is helping him. But when you say, oh, it's going to be a competition, but then you say, oh, Drake May has to blow Jacoby out of the water, and then he'll start.
And then you say he outplayed Jacoby.
Right, and then, but the night before you say, oh, he's the second best quarterback on our roster. Like, that, to me, that's the issue. And part of that is, hey, it's a rookie head coach. He's going to have
Definitely.
Some missteps in the press. But I think a lot of this could have been avoided if just at the beginning said, hey, everybody's going to go out there and compete. And even if he had said, yeah, Jacoby's our starter, but everyone's going to go out there and you're just going to try to get better day by day. We would have been bored by it, but I think that press conference, honestly, that we just played probably would have never even happened.
You used the word circusy, and I think that's very apt
for this.
Is that
a real word?
No, it's not,
okay,
but I like
made
the way. Yeah, but it's great.
It fits my narrative.
Yeah, 100%. It feels very kangaroo courtish. Like, it doesn't feel
court-ish,
real.
Another good word.
Yes, it doesn't feel quite real. And I think that, to me, is more important than the actual decision. You and I, again, you have stated, we were just on 10-2, what, over a week ago now?
Yeah. A lot of fun, by the way.
Yeah, absolute blast, and we argued a lot.
Some people have said it's the most handsome show in Boston sports
radio. I'm not going to disagree with them.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, yeah. who's to call them naysayers? But what I would say is it's you can have your opinion about whether it's the right decision or the wrong decision. I think that's fair, and you and I have argued about that plenty. But I think the more important thing is how we got to this decision has been an absolute nightmare. And to me, I almost feel like Jerod Mayo has been put in a bit of a no-win situation. Like, he's learning on the job, and some of the things he says have come back to bite him a little bit and been, as you said, circusy. But I think the whole situation, when you look at it from kind of that 10,000-foot view, a lot of this is not on him. Like, a lot of this was kind of taken out of his hands and out of his control, which I feel like was doing him dirty a little bit, especially after the Crafts were, like, super gung-ho to name him the next head coach of the New England Patriots following Bill Belichick's exit.
Yeah, it's an interesting point because, you know, Jerod Mayo wasn't the one who chose not to address left tackle at free agency, right?
Correct.
Like, that wasn't him, and that's arguably...
And he tries to make excuses by saying, yeah, well, I mean, we signed the best tackle in free agency that we could in Mike.
He's right, but that's only one out of two.
Like,
that's one out of two tackle positions.
You know,
so, like, I would even agree. Yeah, Mike Onwenu was the best offensive lineman on the market, and you re-signed him, and that's great. That doesn't solve your other tackle problem, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think, I mean, you can go back, and not to go fully down memory lane here, but I think if you really asked the Crafts and they told you the truth, they didn't want Mayo to be their head coach till 2026 or 2027.
Yeah.
The timeline got accelerated because you had three losing seasons in 4 years, a four-win season last year, the total demise of Mac Jones, is, you know, who was, and I know you didn't like Mac from the beginning, and that's fine, but I'm just saying, the guy who they selected to be their franchise QB, the demise of that, and Mac deserves a lot of blame there. Belichick deserves a lot of blame as well.
Agreed.
So I think they accelerated their own timetable by at least a year, if not two. Then you have the Judon situation, which I don't Mayo wasn't choosing not to pay him or not to trade him. Then we'd mentioned the Onwenu. So I think, but some of this, again, with his own statements, he's put himself in a little bit of this bind too. So it's kind of a confluence of things.
Yeah, like I don't think Mayo is blameless here, and that's kind of where I've gotten to, right? I'm a big blame pie guy. I
believe that's your favorite flavor of pie.
Yeah, it is.
Blame
my all-time favorite. Actually, I have a different favorite, but that's for another time off air, because I think that's inappropriate.
I need to mention my mom's chocolate pie on air, because last time we talked about pie and I didn't mention it, you know, she was not happy. So
yeah.
Just give it, you know, I'm going to mention that.
So, but, so I love to assign blame pie, and when you look at Jerod Mayo, like, he definitely deserves some of it, but it's a very small slice. And then I look at, I think the Crafts deserve a large portion of this. They threw him into this like he was the next guy, but then they promote Elliott Wolf, who seems to be the one making every decision, and they took forever to promote him. Like, he wasn't clearly...
He's even made the roster cut decisions, which I don't know about you. And look, I know when Bill was here, he decided everything, but I feel like that is a lot. Like, to decide who you cut on the 53-man roster, like, I know Mayo has, but I feel like that should almost always be a coach's decision. Like, you're out there on the field with those guys every day.
Yeah.
Can this guy play or not? Like, who's better? And I think it was Mayo himself who said, oh, Elliott is, like, that's his final call. I was, that perked my ears up, raised my eyebrows.
Yeah, it's very difficult for me because, like, this clearly seems like an Elliott Wolf plan, right? Green Bay guy, what has Green Bay done the last two quarterbacks they had? Sit them both. They let them sit. Yeah. They let them develop.
Even
they take
Brett
their
Favre
time.
Didn't play right away in Atlanta.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? So it's not a we're drafting a guy, playing him right away situation in Green Bay. And so Alex Van Pelt, also an Elliott Wolf guy. So this everything indicates to me an Elliott Wolf decision, because if I'm the Crafts, if I'm the owner of the New England Patriots, I want to put butts in seats. That's my number one job right now, because I know this team's going to stink, so I need to create some kind of buzz. The only way to create buzz is to start your rookie quarterback that you drafted number three overall. And what are they doing? Not starting the rookie number three overall pick. Instead, they're starting a journeyman backup who has a sub-500 record in the NFL in his career. And so it is evident to me that this is an Elliott Wolf and Alex Van Pelt decision, and you can even tell when Jerod Mayo's at the press conference, he says, we made the decision. I mean, I made the decision. Yeah.
Little Freudian slip.
I don't think it was an accident. Like, that seemed very purposeful to me, in that he is not necessarily thrilled with this decision.
And my concern is, like, when we talk about this mixed messaging stuff, it's one thing if he messes up in the media and he has a couple statements that you and I are like, hey, what does he mean by that? Or people make fun of. But if the team is getting the mixed messaging, then it's a major problem.
Definitely.
Right? Because if you go into the quarterback meeting room and Drake May thinks it's a competition, but Jacoby Brissett doesn't, that's a problem, right? And it extends far beyond that, right? You just pick any position. I mean, if Christian Gonzalez in the defensive back room thinks, oh, my starting spot's fine, and then, so you know, Jonathan Jones says, oh, no, I'm going to take his number one corner job, and Marcus Jones, you know, whatever, that's a problem, right? The inconsistent messaging, if it's trickling down to the team, because the media, it's annoying to us, you know, whatever, fine, and it's silly, but it's not the end of the world. Yeah. But if you have that mixed messaging with the team, and it, remember, rookie head coach, rookie GM, rookie franchise quarterback, you know, guy who hasn't called offensive plays since 2009, rookie defensive coordinator, I think a NFL rookie special teams coach, if you will. He'd been assistant, but not
yep.
like a lot of new guys in new position. You got to get on the same page with that messaging.
You absolutely have to. This they have been preaching collaboration. Preaching it.
Yeah, knocking since, down silos. That was yep. the first thing we heard, I feel like, in the press conference.
The very first thing, and this decision does not feel like collaboration. It feels like three guys were in a room, two voted for one thing, the other one was either undecided or voted for the other thing, and he was simply overruled. And it wasn't really collaboration. It wasn't a decision they came to together. It was, no, we're going to do this. We outvote you, you lose. And that seems weird to me, especially because the two guys making the decision, it seems to me, making the decision were never the first choices to fill their positions that they're currently in. Like, I don't think the Kraft didn't jump the gun right away to promote Elliott Wolf to GM like they did with Gerard Mayo as head coach. They interviewed like 10 different people to be offensive coordinator.
They offered Nick Haley the job and he turned it down.
Exactly. I don't. And clearly, Alex Van Pelt was not the first option.
Zach Robinson, they offered the job too. So that's at least two we know of.
Wiggy all week has been on this point, especially since this announcement. He does not believe that any of the guys Gerard Mayo wanted to be offensive coordinator were ever actually going to get the job. Like, Nick Haley was quote-unquote offered the job, probably a Gerard Mayo option because they worked together in New England. He was familiar with them. Nope. Elliott Wolf was never going to give him the job. That's why they ended up with Alex Van Pelt, because they offered the jobs, but Elliott Wolf was never going to allow that to happen. And, it seems like there is a clear power grab by Elliott Wolf that I am not a fan of.
And I think, or the other possibility to me is, let's say they, because what I've seen reported is that they offered Nick Haley a lot of money and it was a legit offer, but maybe Haley looked at it and said, I don't like the structure there and I don't like the setup there. I'm going to stay with the Rams. Because he stayed with the Rams to be their tight ends coach, I think. He didn't get a promotion with the Rams.
Like, he's a tight ends coach.
Yeah.
You're not even like the run game coordinator, the pass game coordinator, the offensive coordinator, nothing.
Just to be a position coach. And there's a lot in that, but point being, you turn down an OC job at a place, by the way, he won multiple Super Bowls, for 8 years. And he turned it down. I wonder if there's...
But that's, to me, why it seems fishy, right? It seems like that, to me, is an Elliott Wolf leak. Like, he told somebody, yo, yeah, we offered Nick Haley a big contract. He said no. And ultimately, they had to go with his guy, Alex Van Pelt, who he worked with not just in Cleveland, but also in Green Bay. Like, it just... It is becoming clearer to me now post-decision, especially... And I think, again, what solidified it for me was the Gerard Mayo... We made the decision. I mean, I made the decision.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, there is a clear disconnect right now between the head coach, the GM, and the offensive coordinator. It seems like there is a clear divide there, and that does not bode well for your New England Patriots.
Yeah, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I think it was they interviewed 11 people for offensive
coordinator. That sounds about right.
Offered the job to at least one in Nick Haley, I think Zach Robinson as well. And let's not forget, special teams, they offered that job to the guy who went to the Falcons, whose name escapes me, but they offered it to him. He turned it down, so they ended up with where they're at now. At special teams coordinator. So neither one
Marquise
of the,
Williams?
That's who it was. I was going to say Williams and I couldn't remember the first name. But so they offered him the job. He turned it down because he wanted to go with Raheem Morris to Atlanta. So their special teams coordinator is at least their second choice.
Yep.
And their offensive coordinator is at best their third choice.
And it seems, this is me speculating from afar, watching these things unfold. It feels like Elliott Wolf got his guys, Gerard Mayo, all of Gerard Mayo's guys, quote unquote, said no and said, I'd rather stay in LA as a tight ends coach or nah, I'm going to go coach for Raheem Morris as
Atlanta.
His offensive coordinator and special teams coordinator down in Atlanta. And like, Atlanta's a better situation. I get that. Those are equal jobs. That one I at least buy. Yeah. The Nick Haley one's difficult. Like,
I wonder if Nick Haley is, sorry to cut you off,
no.
But I wonder if there's a residual anger from him that in 2022, he should have got the OC job
Yeah, but there's no Belichick here
anymore. I get
anymore.
That, but maybe he looks at the Crafts or the organization as a whole, and he's like, they screwed me 2 years ago. I'm not going there.
That may be true.
Maybe
but
there's a little bit of that.
I feel like Gerard offering him the job would have been the olive branch that would have been okay. Like, because it's a totally different regime. I mean, Andy Hart, more than maybe anybody, was in here trumpeting for the fact that Nick Haley should have gotten a shot when as the offensive coordinator. And like, I agreed in retrospect, and it just seems fishy to me. It smells funny.
And it's crazy because this is an offense that from Charlie Weiss to Josh McDaniels to Bill O'Brien back to Josh McDaniels for 20 years, same system, consistency, which was a major part of their success on offense,
Agreed.
Just the consistency. And now we're, what, the fourth different offense in 4 years?
Yeah.
Like, maybe the biggest appeal of Van Pelt is, you know, he's not going to leave to be a head coach after this year. So at least you'll have 2 years, I guess. Like,
and I mean, I think you're
maybe that's a Wolf thing, too. You know, like he wants the stability, you know, like, hey, I know this guy. I trust this
guy's not going anywhere.
And he's not going to go anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, that's probably another reason why they brought in a guy like Ben McAdoo to help. He's not going to go anywhere. Like, he's going to stay right here and help us continue to develop the quarterback. And it's a plan that may work. It could possibly work. I'm not convinced that it will, but it could. 617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in on the Patriots quarterback decision here with Scheim and Lyons. But right now, John Lyons is going to get you caught up with what's trending in the world of sports.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now, the Red Sox escaped their series opening game in Detroit against the Tigers with a 7-5 win in 10 innings. Red Sox had a 4-0 lead in the eighth. Ultimately, Kenley Jansen blew the save in the ninth, but Sedan Rafael and Jaron Duran hit back-to-back homers in the 10th. Red Sox got the win. They are 3.5 games back in the wild card. Game two of this three-game set will take place tonight. Will Fleming and Lou Maloney have the call from Comerica Park at 6:10 on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Nick Pivetta will get the start for the Sox opposite Tarik Skubal for the Tigers. Joe Weil will get everything started with the Mass Mutual pregame show at 5:10. Mass Mutual, insurance, planning, investments. Alex Cora did say before yesterday's game, Trevor Story is scheduled to begin a rehab assignment in Worcester tomorrow. He's been out since April 5th with a fractured shoulder. It's a day off for the Patriots today. They'll resume practicing on Monday as they prepare for their regular season opener in Cincinnati against the Bengals next Sunday. This is the first full weekend of college football. Week zero was last week. This week is week one. Big games of note. Georgia is up 34. Actually, they just finished. They won 34-3 over Clemson. Virginia Tech was up 27-20 on Vanderbilt just a minute or so ago. Some more action tonight. Texas A&M will be taking on Notre Dame at 7:30. And the Revolution are still in the playoff hunt as they travel to face Real Salt Lake tonight at 9:30. I'm John Lyons, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
This is Scheim and Lyons here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. A wonderful Saturday. College football has officially begun. That Virginia Tech-Vanderbilt game is getting nice and tight. Virginia Tech was up 27-20, and then Vanderbilt drove down, tied the game. It's now 27-27 with under about a minute and a half left in the game. So that one will have an interesting finish for sure. And
probably the most, I guess, entertaining game of the day at very least.
Yes. Oh, very much so. Yeah. I mean, you look around the kind of college football right now, and there are a lot of blowouts. I mean, Tennessee 55-3 right now on UT Chattanooga entering the fourth quarter. Oklahoma State, South Dakota State, close-ish, 17-6. Penn State, West Virginia still in that massive delay.
Did you watch Colorado and North Dakota State the other
I did.
Night?
So, and this is a bit of a tangent here, back kind of off of what we were going to talk about, but I want to ask it anyway since you brought it up. Are you, 1 week in, do you buy the Shedeur Sanders, Travis Hunter hype, or are you kind of like I personally am just like, all right, it's week one. We did this last year and they faded down the stretch. Can we like see it for a whole year?
So I think Travis Hunter is awesome. Like he's a badass and he's the real deal. Sanders, I think, is pretty good. I think the hype's maybe a little overblown, but what concerns me is, I don't know, does that offensive line look better to you than last year? And that what
they
happened?
Played North Dakota State.
And they got pushed around at times.
Yeah.
Like what happened last year when they played Oregon? It's like, oh, like now you're playing a big dog.
Yeah.
And they couldn't. And look, it's a multi-year rebuild. I get it. But I think people are just excited about Coach Prime and Sanders and Hunter. But if you're going to get pushed around at the line of scrimmage, it's that what happened last year is going to happen
again. And you're not getting pushed around at the line of scrimmage by Georgia. You're getting pushed around at the line of scrimmage, no disrespect, but by North Dakota State. Shout out to my guy Buzz, huge North Dakota State fan. But like I look at him, I'm like, That can't happen. I don't care if it's week one.
Well, it's kind of like, do you remember last year when they played Colorado State? It was like the Saturday night game.
Yes.
And they had to win in overtime. And he's like, oh, I went into Brady mode. And like, that was cool and all. But the other side of it, I'm like, yeah, you struggled to beat Colorado State.
Exactly.
Like, that was, and even that TCU win last year, like, I'm not trying to say it was a fraud win, but that TCU team was nothing like the team that had just gone to the national championship.
Nothing.
It was a total, that would be like Washington this year. Totally different team.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, I know it's a fun thing and it's like a fun story, but
well, because everybody loves to talk about Deion,
yeah.
And so if Deion's in the headlines, yeah, it's good for clicks. And
I don't see them competing.
Me either.
Like to, I don't. Maybe they'll get to 500 this year, which
yeah,
would be progress.
Make, they're not going to make the playoff.
Yeah, and I don't even know if they'll get. Maybe they'll get a bowl game. Like,
yeah.
I guess if they get to 500, that would probably bowl eligibility, so they'd get there. But
yeah. So I'm kind of out on Colorado. Like, it's, you know, as long as Deion can be fun, great. But I'm not excited to watch their games, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, if they play, like you said, a big dog, they're going to get smushed.
That's, and I just, because they're in, what, the Big 12 now, and that conference, especially without Oklahoma and Texas, that's weaker. I just don't see them competing against one of the big dogs. Like,
yeah.
They're lucky they're not in the Big 10.
Yeah, 100%.
Where a lot of those teams went.
Definitely. So, yeah, so I hope you're enjoying watching college football today. It is a blast. I'm glad we got started Thursday night. It's nice to just have football back, like actual real football. No preseason, none of that crap. Like, real good football is back in business. And we're 8 days away from the New England Patriots, less than a week away from opening day, Ravens and Chiefs. Then we get Eagles and Packers Friday night in Brazil. And then we get all
sure,
the
that's
full
gonna
slate
go well.
Of Sunday games. You know.
I'm out.
Out on that game?
Out on the Brazil game.
Are you? So if you're, so you would tell me don't bet that game, just stay away.
I would stay away for the travel, the uniqueness of it,
yeah.
And it's two great teams, so it really could go either way. And
yep.
That environment in week one, I would stay away from that.
So we're actually going to get to our NFL season predictions. You know, teams to make the playoffs, champions, yep, all that stuff coming up later on in the program. So you two really good teams. I agree to an extent. I think one of those teams might have a little bit of a fall off.
They're
a little bit of a tease for you. But we'll get back into the Patriots discussion here. In the first segment, we were talking so much about how Jerod Mayo kind of came about this decision, made this decision in his press conference that lasted a minute 15, which I thought was wild. Like, I said to Greg, if that was a Bill Belichick press conference and he was unhappy with the decision that was being made because it had to be quote-unquote collaborative, that would have been a 20-minute press conference. Like, it would have been him explaining how the preseason goes, a lot of snorts, a lot of harumphs.
A left-footed punter reference would have come up at some point.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And so it's just, I think the word you used at the first segment may not exist, but it seems apt, and that is circusy. This whole thing feels circusy. It feels unorganized. It does not feel like collaboration, and I'm worried that the New England Patriots might not win a football game until like week 9.
Yeah, and it's funny. Week 9 is when they go down to Tennessee,
yes,
and that's the first game on the schedule that I'm like, they're definitely better than that team. Like, you know, and I'm not saying they're a huge degree better than Tennessee,
yeah,
but in my mind, I'm like, because even you look at early in the season, it's just like they're not better than the Bengals. They're not better than the Seahawks. They're not better than the Jets. They're not better than the 49ers. They're not better than the Dolphins. They're not better than Houston. Like, you start going,
they're not better than the Jaguars.
I'm six weeks in already. So yeah, that's a tough spot.
And it's just I guess I'm confused. And we've had this discussion a lot. I guess I don't understand the process of why you're sitting him. And it's one thing if you wanted to sit, when you look at what Green Bay has done in the past, you know, where Elliott Wolf comes from, they sit them for full seasons. It's not like you
more
sit
for... More than one in a lot of kids, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not like you're sitting for 4, 5, 6 games. You're sitting for whole seasons. And so what is the plan? To hope the offensive line gets a little bit better over 4 or 5 weeks and then stick Drake May in? Because if your plan was to sit him for the whole season and start Jacoby Brissett, with how bad we've seen this offensive line and people just assume Drake May would go and get killed, Jacoby Brissett absolutely could get killed in the first couple weeks. And then what do? You cut Bailey Zappe. Are you going to go to Joe Milton? No, you have to go to Drake May at that point.
And I think the Zappe cut is interesting to me. And that's a signal that at a bare minimum, they look at Drake May and say, God forbid Jacoby Brissett goes down in week 2, this guy can come in and hand the ball off and complete short passes and it won't be a train wreck. Like,
yeah,
like that, because I felt all summer that Bailey Zappi's future was tied directly to Drake May. Like, if Drake May was in a spot where he was not ready at all, they would have kept Zappe for, you know, Brissett gets injured, they don't have to play May. And by them cutting Zappe, I think it at least tells us, hey, this kid is maybe further along than we expected, further along than maybe the organization when they drafted him expected. So they can at least depend on him to do that. It's not a signal he's ready to start games week one, but at the very least, if there's an injury, he can do the basics.
But my hesitation then becomes, well, if you think he can go out and do that, we've seen him, the head coach outright said he has outplayed Jacoby Brissett in preseason and in training camp, especially in the second half of preseason and training camp. Like, why not just start him week one? To me, everybody makes this big deal about facing Cincinnati. Drake May doesn't have to face the Cincinnati offense. He faces the Cincinnati defense, who, by the way, was in the bottom quarter of the league last year, and they're not going to be much better because Trey Hendrickson is unhappy with his contract. Like, that defense is not going to be better. And so I look at it and I go, that's a pretty easy lit compared to everywhere else on your schedule, right? From week two, I think Seattle's defense is better than Cincy. Clearly, the Jets, the Dolphins,
the Niners,
all those defenses are going to be way better than the Bengals. So I'm looking at it and I go, huh, it's kind of funny. That to me is the easiest landing spot defensively. So if you're comfortable with him coming in following an injury, why wouldn't you just start him against the Bengals?
I think if you look at the schedule, I think the easiest landing spot overall is probably that Tennessee game in week nine. Now, I'm not saying they're going to hold him out that long, but to your point, if you're really waiting for just an easy landing spot, like that's what you kind of have to wait for,
but then
right?
you have to hope and pray Jacoby Brissett doesn't get injured in 9 weeks.
Sure. And it's a good question. Like, so what really can change in 4 or 5 weeks, right? And I think there's a lot more that can change than people realize. And what I mean by that is, okay, your offensive line right now, I think, I don't know how you feel. I have serious concerns about the offensive line.
Definitely.
Right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
New O-line coach, multiple new offensive linemen are going to be in there. Those guys over the course of 4 or 5 weeks in game experience, they're going to get better as a unit. Now, let's not confuse better with good. I'm not saying they're going to be good.
No, but they might go from the worst in football to like not quite the worst.
Yeah, that's good. Yes, very scientific.
From like 32 to 30.
Or even if they could get to, because I mean, PFF, if you want to go by that, they had them at 28. If they get to 23, you know, 24. So like that kind of
that
jump.
That even seems like a stretch.
Right. And maybe it is. But point being, they can get better.
Sure.
And I think Scott Peters can be more comfortable as an O-line coach. And then also, the other piece of this is Alex Van Pelt. He hasn't called plays full-time since 2009. Hasn't really game planned to call plays since 2009, right? So in 4 or 5 weeks, he's going to figure out, all right, what am I comfortable calling? What is this offense good at running? What running back do I really want in there for protections? What tight ends do I want in there in 12 personnel?
I agree to an extent, but doesn't the play calling change from Jacoby Brissett to Drake May? Drake May, his ability to do other things that Jacoby Brissett can't do immediately changes how you play call.
So I don't think it would be a drastic change, though. Like, would there be some different things? So the read option play that he scored the touchdown on against Philly, right? Jacoby's not doing that.
No, that's a red zone installation, but you can make that in a week's time.
Sure.
Like, that's one easy installation.
Like the scramble he had for the first down on the third and long against Washington. Like, Jacoby's not doing that, okay?
No, but that's also an improvised play that's not scripted.
Right. So I think the play calling might change, but I really don't think it would be a drastic change because a lot of what they do as a passer is not that different. Like, it's not like it's Lamar Jackson coming in for Joe Flacco.
I agree.
And it's like,
fair. This
is a different guy. You know, I think the play calling, again, to your point, it would change a little, but it's not even so much the play calling of like, hey, this is a little bit of a different style. It's the operation of it all. Mm-hmm. Like, what was the issue the other night against Washington? I mean, guys couldn't line up right. Like, that's got to get sorted out. Gerard Mayo is a head coach 4 or 5 weeks in. Like, so those are all things. And I'm not sitting here saying that magically by week five against Miami, this is going to be a really good offense.
No.
But I think people get bogged down in, well, what can change in 4 weeks? What can change in 5 weeks? I think a lot can change to make it a better landing spot for him than week one with a rookie head coach, you know, not rookie OC, but rare OC, if you will.
So,
and, and even the receivers, too. And not to go on a tangent here, but like Jalen Polk's going to play a big role, and he's new to the NFL. Like, he's going to get more. Maybe Kendrick Bourne will be back by week 4 or 5.
He should come back around week 5.
Exactly.
Hopefully.
So, like, again, it's just I'm not sitting here saying their offense is magically going to be top 12 in the league in week 5. I just think there is a lot more that can change for the better and potentially for the worse than I think people are giving it credit for.
So I understand that point of view, but wouldn't you also say then there's a possibility the offensive line is just better in week one than we thought too? Because
definitely possible.
We have not seen David Andrews. with the starters at all. Like, he has kind of taken time off. It's just been stay healthy, make sure you're good to go for week one.
Team MVP.
Yeah, they're resting him. And I mean, I just look at how important a guy like Jason Kelce was for the Eagles, calling out protections, yeah. being like, no, we're not doing that audible. Cancel yeah. that.
Creed like, Humphrey, even with the Chiefs, they just gave him a lot of money.
Exactly. And so for me, I look at a guy like David Andrews, I'm like, oh, as soon as he steps on the field, a lot of those alignment issues might go away a little bit because he's going to take charge.
Yep.
A lot of those protections at the line of scrimmage, which Drake May is already doing, by the way. I don't think people are giving him enough credit for that. Like, he's already trying to set protections at the line of scrimmage. I think those are going to be amplified because David Andrews will be there. So I think the offensive line might just look better week one right away because David Andrews is out there.
And that happened last year. Let's not forget, we go into last year week one like, oh my God, how are they going to block the Philly D line?
Yeah.
And they did okay.
They did fine.
Ironically, they got worse later in the year. But at that point, they were out of it.
The quarterback situation deteriorated rapidly. It was just a whole nightmare.
Another piece, and I found this interesting. Drake May talked about this, I don't know if it was 2 or 3 days ago, that one of the things he's working on is coverages and figuring out coverages and reading coverages. And I think that's another thing in 4 or 5 weeks, not going to solve it all. He's going to gain a much better understanding, even just watching, because what he's seeing right now, he lines up against the Eagles' backups, the Commanders' backups.
Sure.
They're just going to play a shell cover 2 or basic cover 3.
So
they're not going to be playing, they're not going to be buzzing and all these kinds of crazy things or match zone. I don't think they're doing really a lot of that in the preseason. So he's going to see, oh, this is what it looks like on game day. Now, that is something eventually you just need game experience to play well against.
Yeah, but also, won't you see more of those base coverages in the first couple weeks of the season anyways? Like, it's, again, a lot of coaches nowadays treat those first few weeks of the season like preseason. They have to ramp up. You generally will see offenses at times are farther ahead of defenses at the beginning of the year, higher scoring games, just because defenses are getting, you're used to ramping up to tackling, ramping up to playing actual coverages in defense. Like, the Mike McDaniel shifting all over the place doesn't happen in week one.
McDaniel does it. I mean,
the Seahawks head coach.
Oh, McDonald. Yeah.
McDonald.
Yeah.
Thank you. Gosh. Yeah. Too many Macs.
He does, right. And a guy you'll see in week two. And, okay, are they maybe as complex as in week 16 as week 3? No, but there's still a massive difference to me between what we saw from just take Washington as an example. What we saw from their secondary and their coverages the other night to what you're going to see from Cincinnati. And you're not wrong that, like, Cincinnati's defense isn't that scary, but
like that to me,
you're going to see is so, it's just drastically different, even if it's not what you would see in the divisional round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I guess I agree with that. It's so hard for me. Because people, fans at least, that, when they call in and when they text in all the time, the offensive line just isn't good enough. It's not good enough. You can't put a young rookie out there behind him. Well, if you're comfortable enough for him to come in if Jacoby Brissett gets hurt behind this horrible offensive line, like, why wouldn't you be comfortable starting him against quite possibly the worst defense you're going to see all year?
Yeah,
maybe at least one of the top three worst defenses you're going to see.
I would
see all
say
year.
Probably at least the first half, right?
Definitely
the first half of the season.
Until week 9.
Yeah, that's fair. Tennessee in week 9. And look, and I think that's a fair point. What I would say to that, though, is what you're doing coming in off the bench, I think they would shield him, like shelter him in that, like, you're handing the ball off to Stevenson, you're throwing quick screens.
Let the kids sling the rock, man.
That would be more exciting, I know. But
it's just also, like, that's how you learn. I mean, the Texans were reserved a lot of last season with C.J. Stroud, but when it was, 3rd and 10, the kid came out and just slung the rock. Like, you even see it now in preseason. I mean, Matthew Stafford was talking about it because I think they did some joint practices, and Stafford was talking about how he's like, he saw this dagger concept. Normally you don't throw it into that defense, but he just saw it. Window wasn't tight enough, so he just ripped it. Yeah. And it's like, okay, just let the kid do what he does best. And he just kind of – the point kind of came across to me when we had Rob Ninkovich called in to the Greg Hill Show on Thursday following the Gerard Mayo press conference. And he's like, you need a guy to just go out there and kind of play backyard football a little bit. I'm like, doesn't Drake May do that better than Jacoby Brissett?
I worry about that, though. Like, to me, that can be dangerous because I don't think – and look, Ninko's won multiple Super Bowls. He knows more football than me. But I don't know if you want to put anybody out there, including a rookie, and say, oh, we want you to have some backyard football. Like, I think
he was okay with Brissett being the starter. Like, that's kind of, thought it was a good idea.
The touchdown that May threw that got called back against Washington, where he ran to the left.
Yep.
Like, that was A+.
Oh,
like, that was awesome.
As good as it gets.
But I don't want that being, like, his first instinct, like, and grow it, like, hey, I'm going to do stuff like this. In that situation, it was perfect, and the penalty wasn't on it. Whatever.
But even when he talked it through, like, Drake May talked about it after the game, I think, and he even said, he's like, yeah, like, I saw this concept. It just didn't come together, so I tried to go leak out backside and make something happen, and it worked. Like, there was a clear process to it. It wasn't. It didn't feel to me like that was his first instinct.
Yeah, and that's what you want, right? You don't want that to be the first instinct, because you want him playing within the structure, because if that's his first instinct,
then it becomes a problem.
It's fun for 3 weeks, and then you're like, ooh.
Well, then he starts throwing intercept. Then he turns into Zach Wilson, where it's like he's trying to do that all the time, and then he throws interceptions, and it becomes annoying.
Like, I think the Jets made obviously a massive mistake starting Zach Wilson when they did. They probably made a mistake drafting him, but they made a massive mistake. And I think one of the issues they had, and they really had this issue with Sam Darnold, is they were under so much pressure, especially from their blind side, everything they did got sped up. Remember the seeing ghost thing? With that's what I think another thing to worry about with May. And I feel like May's personality, and not to take a huge shot at Mac Jones, but he has a better personality than Mac to deal with that. Mm. But you still, that's another thing I think you run the risk of in the first few weeks, is if he starts to, because it's not so much even just like, oh, he'll get hit. Okay, everybody gets hit in football.
Yeah, everybody does.
You don't want him to get...
He got hit in that preseason game, and he popped up, and he was fine.
He got
smoked, and he was fine.
But I don't want him to get sped up. I think that's a different thing. Like, okay, he's going to get hit. He's going to get hit. I don't want him to get sped up where all of a sudden, you know, he's coming off a read in half a second instead of a full second, and the full that extra half second, that dude would have been open.
Yeah,
like,
I think that's what
I worry about, too.
I agree. That definitely can happen. But when you look at the Sam Darnold situation, right, it was kind of Bill Belichick was the one that resulted in Sam Darnold seeing ghosts. And luckily for Drake May, doesn't really have to worry about going up against a guy like Bill Belichick.
Well,
what's the best defensive mind he has to go up against this year? Is it Mike McDonald in week two?
The best defensive mind, that's a great question, actually.
Might be Matt Eberflus in week 10 or 11?
Because I think the 49ers defense and the Jets defense might be the two best he faces. So if you want to say
overall,
Saleh,
the scheme is pretty simple. Yeah, it's like, we rush four, we get after the quarterback. It's not like Mike McDonald's, where it's like the safety is responsible for shifting the coverages all over the place and yada, yada, yada. It's very kind of straightforward.
Yeah, that's a good question of like, what is the most complex defense? Because I would probably say it's still going to be San Francisco because
they're so talented
and they're so fast up front.
Yeah,
like, he's going to have to go so fast up front. And whoever, Jacoby, Drake, whoever, like, they're just so, like, Nick Bosa is going to be on you in 2 seconds.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons why, though, I think it's also important the Patriots can run the football, because that's how you stop the pass rush. I mean, Belichick showed it when they faced the Rams in the Super Bowl. He's like, oh, you want to get after me with Aaron Donald? I'll just run it right up your gut.
Because really, if you have an elite pass rush, the two best ways to defeat it, running the football, or you go five wide and you get the
quick
ball
passes
out in the second and a half.
Bingo.
I don't know if the Patriots are capable of that second thing.
That's fair. 617-779-7937. Are you happy with the quarterback decision to go with Jacoby Brissett in week one over Drake May? And how do you feel about the decision-making process with Gerard Mayo's comments, I made the decision? Let us know how you feel. 617-779-7937. It's Shyman Lyons here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. It's Shyman Lyons here on a wonderful Saturday afternoon. Lyons, are you a big John Mayer guy? I know you're a big rap guy.
Not anti-John Mayer, just not huge into John Mayer.
The new Zed John Mayer song that we just rejoined with, just dynamite
groups. I did go to the Kenny Chesney concert last week.
Your wife's a big country fan, right?
So is
how
Zach
is that?
Brown. You know what? Like I said, not really my style of music, but it was good. That was a legit
show. It's a party.
I'm telling you, man, I was like looking around, just trying to do the math in my head. I'm like, there's got to be like 55,000 people here at a minimum. Yeah, it was.
And like 80% of them are in the parking lot tailgating. Did you tailgate? Have a good time?
So, it was funny. Did not hit any traffic on the way in.
Really?
I was
normally
shocked.
You sit in traffic for hours.
No, so we got there 3:15 or so, and we waited about 5 minutes from the street to turn into the lot. And then once we got in the lot, it was about 5 more minutes to park, and that was like no traffic on the highway.
That's awesome.
None on Route 1. I was literally shocked.
Yeah, that is stunning.
Yeah.
Because I have sat in hours and hours of traffic just to get in.
Yeah. On the way home, though, we left a few minutes early, so we avoided some of it, but you could just tell like there was going to be multiple hours of traffic.
So what my friends and I used to do is we would go to Country Fest every year, and afterward, we would just set the grill back up, cook some burgers and dogs, hang out in the parking lot, and wait for cars to get out, and then just eventually leave.
Yeah. I've done that after Patriots games a couple times. It's a little different, though, when it's like 30 degrees out after a Patriots game.
True, very different than when it's, 85.
You know what I hate? I don't know how you feel about it. So have you been to... like a Gillette Stadium event in the past year since they changed the parking structure?
Yeah, so I went to Pat's Bills last year where the Patriots beat the Bills.
So,
yeah,
oh, yeah. Mac Jones' finest hour.
Yeah, his
there
best
you go.
Game. Yeah, that's why I told Ken Laird, I said, I need to go to more Patriots games. You guys got to start sending me to Patriots games because then Mac Jones might actually be good. He wants to prove me wrong when I'm in the stadium. Yeah. But you know.
I think we need to start a petition that you get to go to Drake May's first start. Whenever that is, you get, and even if it's in Tennessee, if it's in Chicago,
send me. I'll be there.
You need to go.
Man on the street. I would love to. Oh, God. I would die.
And
I
you
would
have
be
to take me because it was my idea.
Okay. Got it.
Sounds good. But no, so I don't know how you feel about this, but so parking across the street is free.
Yep.
But the lots are all like dirt lots.
Yes.
So if it rains, they get like I went to Bill Belichick's last game in January and it snowed. It was brutal getting out of that lot. It was
especially
snowy.
You don't have four-wheel drive.
Right. It was, and I have a sedan, so it was muddy, snowy, icy. It was like, I almost thought I wasn't going to get out of there, to be completely honest. And I was getting nervous. So point is, I got out, and so like, yeah, it's free, but the lot itself sucks.
Stinks.
And you can prepay across the on the stadium side to, you know, have nice spaces, but you have to prepay. They're limited. They go quickly. And yeah, they're cheaper than they used to be, which is a good thing, but I'm like, all right, either like let anybody park for pay or whatever, or pave the lots across the street.
That's what they need to do. Is that in the off season they need to just pave those lots?
Yeah, it's just especially. I mean, because look, a lot of people drive trucks and park them there, but there's a lot of people that don't.
Yeah.
And then it's like you're expecting, and even in good weather, like the other night after the concert, I have my sedan, whatever. Oh no, it's my wife's car, but she has a lower to the ground, like smaller SUV, and like we're driving on uneven like grass.
Yeah,
it's like come on, this is a $5 billion franchise.
I went to the Travelers over the summer, and with the day we were there, it just downpoured. Ooh. I saw a car like, and it was like a flash flood type of downpour that lasted probably 45 minutes to an hour, and at the end of it. Still sitting in the parking lot the entire time, by the way, trying to get out. It took 2 hours just to get out of the parking lot. There was a car in the parking lot, and it's a sedan, and the water, I kid you not, is up to the door level, like to the beginning of the door level. They open the door, and there's water going to get in their car. Like, it's just like, oh, that's not great.
Yeah. And that's
how do you expect people to do that?
Not ideal, as the kids say. Yeah. And like, if they want to do the prepaid thing at Gillette to make it more streamlined to get in, I get that.
Yeah,
I'm just saying,
sure.
Pave the lots across the street. Maybe, you know, find a way to have a little bit more parking available on the stadium.
This is
side
the John too. Lyons moonshot.
Yeah. It's just, you know, help us out.
Yeah.
I'm a loyal customer.
I think that's fair. I don't think you're asking for much. You're just, hey, pave the lot over there, please.
Yeah. You know, I went to Belichick's last game. I went to Brady night. I went to Kenny Chesney.
Oh, you went to Brady night too?
Oh, man. Yeah.
You are. So you're a Gillette patron, right?
Yeah. So
Belichick's last. Yeah. Look at you go.
Yeah. Like I drove through a mini blizzard to go to Belichick's last game.
Wow.
And I went to Brady night on game three of the NBA finals and missed the first half of the finals to go to Brit. Like they got to pave the lots for me.
I think I've been to Gillette.
I helped pay for Bob Kraft's wedding when 2 years ago I paid $80 for parking when they played Cincinnati on Christmas Eve and lost 22-18 on a last minute fumble.
That's tough.
Yeah, you know, I helped pay for his wedding. He can pave across the street for me.
Yeah, I think I've been to Gillette Stadium for more soccer games than Patriot games.
Kenny Chesney, I bought 4 beers. You want to take a guess how much the 4 beers cost?
Oh, yeah, I know exactly how much it cost. With tip or without tip, we talked.
Just the base cost.
$72.
$81.
That was close.
That was a damn good guess.
Yeah, well, I just assumed like $18 a beer.
$81 for 4 beers.
Oh, boy.
And they can't pave across the street for me?
Yikes. You know?
They're never going to let me back now, but you know you know what I mean?
They'll let you back.
My credential for next year's training camp is just going to be denied.
Sir,
you're on a watch list.
Sir, we need to escort you off the premises.
I know. They're not going to let me play in the media flag football game next year.
Maybe.
I played this year. It was
did
fun.
You?
Yeah.
Nice. Who'd you play? Did you play receiver?
I did.
Nice.
You know how many targets I got?
Zero.
Yeah. Even though I was open. It's unreal. I want to be like Keyshawn Johnson. Like, throw me the damn ball. But I'm like, because it was like, Tommy Curran was our quarterback, and then there was like some other people there that are obviously more famous than I am. So I'm like, I guess I'll just shut up. But I was like, man, throw me the damn ball.
I don't want to toot my own horn. I have some of the softest hands in the building.
Did I tell you how the media game ended?
No. Oh, yeah, didn't somebody get hurt?
They had to take a guy out in an ambulance.
So what's worse, that...
He got hurt celebrating a play.
What's worse, that or Field Yates separating his shoulder, trying to get his fantasy draft order.
I'd say
ESPN.
Field Yates, because at least we were competing. Tough. We were on the Gillette Stadium game field competing at a football game. So that was, at least we were competing.
He was tackling a dummy on the beach.
Oh, that's tough.
Field's a great guy, by the way. He's a
legitimately nice guy.
Yeah, legitimately awesome guy.
And in better shape than I am. But yeah. Oh.
It's funny how much enjoyment we get from the pain of others. One of my girlfriend's favorite moments of our entire relationship is we were getting ready to leave, and she was standing at the top of the stairs, trying to zip her jacket. And I'm like, "You're taking too long. Get out of my way." And I took the first step down the stairs, slipped, went, just tumbled
down,
down the stairs. Knee goes through the wall. And then I'm just rolling around at the bottom of the stairs. She couldn't stop laughing. It's her favorite memory of our relationship to this point.
Shining highlight of Chris Schein.
There you go. Oh, God. 617-779-7937, 37937 if you want to weigh in on the text line. It's Schein and Lyons here. We'll get back to the football discussion coming up next here right on Boston Sports Original WEEI.